This is David Ellis, editor of Health Futures Digest. We digest so you don't get indigestion. You can access this podcast and the written version of it at hfd.dmc.org. In the last issue, we digested articles that seemed to us to point to how efficiently healthcare practitioners, policymakers, and financiers will take to the postmodern medicine barreling down on them. And we concluded, not very. One of the reasons might be the unprecedented difficulty of planning in an era of already rapid and still accelerating change. The articles digested for this issue include one that suggests healthcare institutions should adopt a new form of rolling strategic planning. Instead of creating a five-year plan and sticking it on the shelf, we should have it open at every board meeting and amend it in light of new developments and operational experience. The key aspect of a rolling plan is a laser-like focus on mission, values, and vision. Often these are the last things that come to mind in the time of crisis, but they should come first because they comprise the heart and soul of an organization. However, they have to be taught and internalized. When they are, deciding and prioritizing what to do in a crisis becomes easier. But not even tugs from the heartstrings or admonitions from the soul focus strategic attention quite like a threat to survival, without which there is no heart nor soul. Consider the threat to hospitals and doctors posed by retail clinics. We've written about this threat several times before, and it would be nice, but probably totally off base, to think that our voice was heard. No matter, the point is that the threat evidently was taken seriously and was responded to. Over the past 2 years, hospitals and doctors have been competing with the clinics at their own game, offering patients the convenience of neighborhood urgent care centers, extended office hours, and adjusting their schedules to accommodate walk-ins and same-day scheduling. They're also competing financially by hiring more nurse practitioners to handle routine cases. While the economy doubtless played a part, it cannot be entirely coincidental that over the same 2 years, some 70 retail clinics located in Meijer supermarkets in the Midwest have closed, and so have at least 86 mini-clinics. Evidently, then, survival trumps higher values when it comes to dealing with a threat, although hospitals with a mission to deliver the best care, and what hospital does not, can claim to be as much mission-driven as threat-driven in taking on the retail clinics. Close behind survival as a trumper of higher values come denial, greed, indolence, carelessness, technological arrogance, and lagging legislation. Some mix of these is a recipe for disaster, as when BP ignored warning signs of a dangerous oil well, and as when NASA ignored warning signs of brittle O-rings and insecure foam insulation, each of which led to space shuttle disasters. When warnings of disaster are heeded, as in the Y2K computer bug scare, the ignorant and foolish may scoff and wonder what all the fuss was about afterwards, but the point is that disaster was averted. And the point is that the world is changing now very fast, so we need new ways, perhaps we need a rolling plan, to predict and avert disaster. In medicine at least, most of the change, the accelerating change, is for the general good, even if it does hurt a few people. Vaccines for malaria, TB, Alzheimer's, AIDS, pandemic flu, genital herpes, urinary tract infections, grass allergies, dengue fever, MRSA, C. difficile, traveler's diarrhea, and even cocaine and nicotine addiction. That's quite a list. These are all under development in a resurgent onslaught by the pharmaceutical industry. The success of these vaccines will benefit billions, but it will also hurt those whose livelihood depends on the continuing presence of those diseases and who do not see the vaccines coming and factor them into their rolling plans. Hospitals should, but typically don't, plan strategically for their future clinician workforce, even though nearly 60% of healthcare costs go to clinical labor, that's on a global basis at least. This affects patient care, clinician morale, and service delivery, and ultimately the mission of the institution. To prevent that, of course, here's where that laser-like focus on higher values might come in handy. Workforce planning is a problem not just for medicine. Why do the stocks of GE, IBM, Texas Instruments, and other large companies get hammered, as they were recently, even though they beat profit forecasts. The reason is that sales are sluggish. Why are sales sluggish? Well, it's because unemployment is high and the jobless don't consume much. The European Union hopes to create more than 168,000 jobs through more funding for scientific research and innovation. But is scientific and technological innovation really a solution to the jobs situation and the broader economy? Businesses become more profitable when they can replace people with automation, but the replaced people become non-consumers. So companies sell less, and down goes the spiral toward economic disaster. With respect to the current jobless recovery, one pundit said recently that companies won't hire again until labor costs equal third world labor costs. Given the growing trend to medical tourism, perhaps even physicians' incomes won't stabilize until they too reach third world levels. In the meantime, the decline in income is driving mid-career physicians in solo practice, as well as graduating med students, to take salaried jobs at hospitals. On the bright side, perhaps, the developing world is much shorter on doctors than it is on factory workers, so there may be opportunities there for providers in the West who are willing to relocate internationally or to work via telemedicine. The future of healthcare is certainly set for a period of turbulence that extends well beyond that caused by health reform. A telling perspective on that future is provided in an article in Advertising Age magazine, which points out that location is no longer the be-all and end-all for a healthcare provider. The healthcare business is developing its own destination segment, as they put it. World-class medical centers have developed their own specialties and it's become part of their brand value. 25% of the patients at the Mayo Clinic, they claim, come from more than 500 miles away. All such market extension projects are backed by heavy advertising. Recent campaigns have included Mass General's Heart and Vascular Services, Mayo Clinic's Transplant Services, Sloan Kettering's Cancer Services, and Cleveland Clinic's Heart Services. Cleveland has to deal with home improvement superstore giant Lowe's to serve as the preferred provider for employees' heart care. The Mayo Clinic has a similar agreement with Walmart for transplants. Advertising wisdom underlies this focus on specialties. I say refreshing soda, you think Coca-Cola. I say cancer treatment, you think Sloan Kettering. The social media, the new word-of-mouth carriers, are increasingly used to get these messages across. From May of last year to June of this, the number of hospital Twitter accounts and YouTube channels almost doubled. Mayo Clinic now has its own social media manager, as indeed does our own institution, the Detroit Medical Center. Key takeaways are that, first of all, hospitals need to win awards, like the U.S. News and World Reports awards that obviously are transmitted nationally. They need then to advertise their awards well beyond their traditional primary service areas, and they need to use social media as a key part of their campaigns. But can every hospital aspire to what I would call Mayo-dom? Last September, President Obama touted the Mayo Clinic as a model for national healthcare reform, but is it replicable? Critics point out that Mayo's patients are wealthier, healthier, and less racially diverse than average, while its rates are higher than average, and this allows it to thrive despite lower Medicaid spending, as cited by its supporters. Since these demographic conditions apply to few other systems, the model as a whole may not be so transplantable, and systems that try to adapt it are likely to fail, say the critics. U.S. providers not only cannot emulate Mayo, it seems that in the aggregate they cannot emulate the health systems of six other industrialized countries, the Netherlands, UK, Australia, Germany, New Zealand, and Canada, in terms of quality, efficiency, access to care, equity, and healthy lives, according to a recent Commonwealth Fund study. The UK's National Health Service performed especially well in terms of quality of care and access to care, with relatively short waiting times for basic medical care and non-emergency access to services after hours, although with longer waiting times for specialist care and elective non-emergency surgery. The NHS was also top in terms of efficiency, as measured by total national spending on health as a percentage of GDP, as well as the amount spent on health administration and insurance. In contrast, the US consistently underperformed in most areas of healthcare relative to the six other countries. But health reform should be making a difference by the time it is fully implemented in 2014. These, then, are just some of the factors likely to impact stakeholders in medicine over at least the next decade, growing more acute as time goes on. Old forms of strategic planning were devised for relatively static ages. The transition to managed care in the 1990s, when all healthcare was still largely local, artisanal, and manual, seemed nightmarish enough to hospital managers at the time, but now they face transition to the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act legislation, the health reform legislation, in a world where healthcare is going global, scientific and technological, and where the economy appears to be going, well, everywhere and nowhere. For the healthcare organization to deal with all this might take more than a rolling strategic plan, as described at the beginning of this issue. It might require a permanent strategic planning committee that does nothing all day except respond to events as they happen and adjusts forward plans accordingly. It will be a very busy body. In the next issue of the Digest, we'll continue to examine developments affecting healthcare practice and policy. Meantime, thank you for listening, and remember that Associate Editor Julian Bond and I digest so you don't get indigestion. As always, we'd be delighted to hear from you, and we really do mean that. You can find our email or post a comment on our website at hfd.dmc.org.